world dominated by fear and mass manipulation of the media. Who can you trust? Just when you think there is no hope alive, you find out that there is an alternative news source to turn to. Revere Radio Network, keeping the dream of sovereignty and freedom alive for all. Revere Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in the following broadcast do not necessarily reflect the views of Revere Radio Network, Rob Revere, or any other host on the network. They are the personal thoughts and feelings of the host given the presentation. We support total free speech here at Revere Radio Network, even when it's ugly. Enjoy.
Hey, you're listening to Revere Radio Network. Stay tuned.
You all know why I'm here, not an order. And I would not try to convince you of the worthiness of our cause. I'm a soldier, and we are at war.
We seem to never learn, here we go again. They rallied up the troops, God forgive the sin. Hidden agendas, can't we fight for truth? No, then there be no need to fight. Love isn't fatal, there's no fatalities. Hate supports U.S. principalities. In this separation, we all suffer. We need to be in love with each other. This isn't training, actual invading. Depleted uranium is raining. Iraq, just know we don't have Bush's back. With a vicious attack, crossing borders with might. On foot, catching flight. For hypocrisy, I will not fight. The Most High loves I, the word won't die. Even after all the times it's been revised. I've been shot by Charlton Heston, and he even autographed the weapon. The bullet was lodged in my left shin. I asked the doctor, and she kept it in.
The stress of waiting for the tension of battle, readying to make war, making peace with their God.
I baptize you in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Before their baptism of fire.
You're listening to TruthLoveFreedom.org. What's up, everybody? Back for another week. This is So Real, and we have an exciting show for you. Today's Friday the 13th. Some of you know the significance.
Tribal gangsters sit down to plan an after-school program. A religious fanatic posts footage of an interfaith service project. A group of teenage boys watches a video of a father playing catch with his son. An adult film star paints thumbnail portraits of elderly couples, fully clothed and smiling. A record executive records a demo of his apology. A policeman makes reverse 911 calls, instructing residents to take to the streets. A patriarch reports for duty. She's wearing an orange jumpsuit and holding a picket sign. She's ashamed of her birthplace, but retreat is not an option.
Women and children, front line, log on, tune in, stand and be counted. In the belly of the vulture, watch your back. There's no civilians, women, children, frontline prison. Consider this a distant early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution gathering dust particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation too fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Butterfly wing crosswinds send black hawks toward hurricane survivors. Roses sprout from empty lots and sidewalk cracks. Pacifist guerrillas move undetected through concrete jungles. New forms are beginning to take shape. Once occupied minds are activating. People are waking up. The insurgency is alive and well.
Rise of the full-bot portrait of the new American insurgent. Rattle and shake the foundations of the world order. Assembly line, consent, resist, refuse, inform, create. Direct loved ones to the trenches. Suit up, pour trouble into fortresses. Plaster, bronze, aluminum, broken porcelain, rusted platinum. Burn blood stains from decompressed diamonds. Hammer the battle cry into braille-studded armor.
We are building up a new world.
All right, everybody.
Do not remain neutral. Do not rely on this.
This is going to be a really fun broadcast, for me at least. And I'm proud to announce Justin is back in the house.
At least for today. We'll see what happens.
Oh, man. So it's Friday the 13th. And some of you know the significance of Friday the 13th. And if you know the significance of Friday the 13th, you also find it interesting that we picked this date for to do an interview with a 32nd degree Freemason of the Scottish Rite. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Let's just put it that way. Okay. So, today is Friday the 13th of June. And we are about to call up Greg Stewart from FreemasonInformation.com and MasonicTraveler.com. And he actually wants me to plug this. He has a new podcast. And I actually, let me see, what is that? MasonicCentral.com or MasonicCentral.blogspot.com.
Cool.
Maybe I inspired him. I don't know.
Oh yeah. I'm sure it was you. Might've been me. Yeah.
We did a interview with him once before when we were just doing a podcast, and, it went really well, man. I like this guy. I got to say, I really like him. I've talked to hundreds of Freemasons over the time that I've been studying the topic, and I got to say that as far as somebody who's willing to be honest and considerate to other people's views, he is like the best. I mean, I've never met anybody who is willing to even consider the possibility that something is wrong with Freemasonry. Mm-hmm.
And usually you don't find someone coming on a show like this.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, not this show.
Yeah,
you
definitely.
And, you know, he's already blessed us with 2 hours of his time once before, and he's coming back again. And I'm really happy about it, man. This is going to be a lot of fun. I want you guys to call in and ask him questions. And I just want to make this statement once and let it stand for the rest of the show. Please be considerate to him. I know you have differences in opinion, but he is a person. And I want you guys to respect him and treat him as a person and not call up and make any accusations or make crude remarks towards him. If you, please do that. I mean, honestly, I don't like censoring, but if you're going to call and you're going to be rude, I'm going to drop you. You can ask any question you want. You can ask him whether he worships Lucifer galore, but don't start yelling at him. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. If he says, no, I don't. You know what I'm saying? Be fair. Be fair to him. You know,
be civil,
be integrity, have integrity.
Yeah.
You know, and, I'm sure that it will be a very informative, show. So welcome back, Justin.
Yeah, thanks. I got today off. My life's been going kind of crazy with my stupid job schedule. So this week I've got Friday off. I can be here. Hopefully we'll be able to make that happen more often.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm really hoping. I mean, we might have to work something out. We talked about the justice report.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting. You know, to see that progress.
And, but at least today I can actually be here.
Yeah. So that's good. And let's see here. I want you guys to call in case you do not know what the number is. The number is 1-877-REVERE-0. That's 1-877-738-3730. Do me a favor. Please don't call in right now, and don't call in right at the beginning of the interview. I want a little time to talk to him about stuff and just kind of get him settled in. Now, of course, we're kind of small time here, so we don't have anybody screening calls, and we don't have anybody like you know, making sure that the popping, I mean, we're literally just going to pop you right on the air if you call. And if somebody else calls while somebody else is on the air, you're going to get dropped. I mean, I have to do it. It's just the way my setup is. And if you want it to get better, for God's sake, send us some money. And it will get much, much better.
Is this the first week you've been able to do that with calls or no?
No, I was able to do it last week, but nobody called in.
Oh.
So. But I called you. I called you and got
That's
you
right.
on the air. So
that, right.
it worked that in that far. And I'm assuming that the 800 number is forwarded to us. And if it's not, go to my website, truthlovefreedom.org. We are on StickCam. You can see a live video footage of us. You can chat in the chat room. We're going to keep our eyes on that from time to time. We're not able to pay too much attention to it. There's also a little thing there called I'm Online. It literally tells you the 4 chat clients that I have open right now, and you can send me a message. If you can't call, text message me a question for him, and I'll ask.
Yeah, that's cool.
And there's multiple
one way or the
ways.
Other. Yeah, one way or the other, if you got a question, we can get it.
Yeah.
We can get it to him.
Yeah, so just if you will, you know, take the time to do that, and we'll see what we can kick out here. So let's see here.
It's about time for me to call him in about 5 minutes here. Do you have any updates? Have you been paying attention to the news lately?
Actually, honestly, it's been a strange week for me. I've had this weird feeling. I don't know how else to put it, but for some reason, I've had a really strong feeling that I need to distance myself from 24-hour news coverage. I mean, I'm basically, you know, I can easily become a news addict. So I feel like I'm detoxing, at least right now this week. I know it sounds kind of ridiculous. I literally have no idea what's going on in the world right now, which is not very good, but it's true. It's been really a discipline trying to not let myself know what's going on. I won't even look at a newspaper headline if it's like, you know, if I'm passing by a newsstand or something. So it's kind of like a fast, you'd almost say.
Bravo. Yeah. I think that's wonderful because honestly, the news you probably were getting was so tainted with propaganda, I doubt that any of it really was true.
Well, that's
you know what I'm saying. I mean, you get names, you get places, and then you know all the opinion comes in and saturates the actual information.
No, that's totally true. And I honestly don't really miss it. The only thing I kind of missed was the spectacle of it, you know. And I think I was paying attention to the primary that was happening in the Democratic Party or whatever. Well, that kind of ended. And then all of a sudden, I decided to go on this kind of media fast or whatever. And, you know, it was good timing. I'm not missing it, really. It's kind of nice. You know, I've been able to devote time to other things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Good news is that the let me just go ahead and bring this up here in just a second. But Ireland, did you hear the news about Ireland?
No.
No, they basically, from what I understand, and this is the best I can understand it, they basically gave a big middle finger to the European Union's attempt to try to create a new set of guidelines and constitutional rules, I guess, for their constitution.
For their country?
Right, for all of them. They're trying to go through country by country, and it's constantly getting rejected, but bravo for the Irish.
What's their game?
That's going to have to be another show, bro.
Yeah, okay. I figured.
I mean, I have actually, and I want to also make another announcement. I'm doing an interview with this Freemason, which is a 32nd of the Scottish Rite. But I'm doing another interview. I don't know what his degree is. But basically, the last interview that I did, he sent a text or a message I think it was on the website. I don't know. Either it was that or in my email, basically saying that he wanted an opportunity to express his opinion on Freemasonry, which I was like, okay, yeah, it's fine with me. You know, no problem. Because he's not an esoteric Freemason. He doesn't believe in the occult stuff. He's more into it, I guess, from what I understand, for the fraternal aspects of the organization, which, you know, I would like to give a balanced opinion about everything.
Yeah, what's that like, you know? Really get an idea.
Yeah, so we're going to have him on the show, too, and it'll be interesting to see what that's all about. I also have Vicky Davis from channelingreality.com. I think it is .com. Let me check it real quick. And she has been dedicating many, many years of study to the North American Union agenda, United Nations. She talks about – she just blows me away. I get emails nearly every day from her.
Whoops.
That was funny. I get emails from her nearly every day, just radical research, tons of information, documents, proof, video, all kinds of stuff. I mean, she's way into it. I'm so impressed with her that I'm definitely going to have her on the show. I think it's going to be the next show, actually.
Sweet.
We are planning to go to the Bohemian Grove to do a live broadcast. And when we do that, you know, we're going to do an interview. Either I have to figure it out. I'm either going to go the first weekend or the last weekend that they have it. It's a week-long affair. And, you know, if I go the first weekend, I'll do a broadcast and an interview from Bohemian Grove, and I'll meet her probably in person, hopefully. If not, I'll call her on the phone. But she is the head of the Bohemian Action Network, which has been protesting the Bohemian Grove event for several years. And I think she'll have a lot of interesting insights. She seems to have – she lives right down the street from it. So she has a lot of insight about what's going on there and has for quite a long time. And so that's going to be really interesting. And I'm going to do the interview with her the first weekend that the Bohemian Grove event is going on. But whether or not I'm going to be at the Grove itself that weekend or the next weekend is yet to be seen. I don't know. I have to decide. From what I understand, the last weekend is when all the big wigs go there. And I want to see if I can catch some photos or something of somebody important.
Yeah, celebrity sites.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, it's just... it's been a very interesting week, and I unfortunately didn't. I'm so interested in just getting this guy on the phone right now. I'm going to work on that. Let's go ahead and kick in some music.
Sure.
And we'll get him on the air in just a second, and then we'll have you guys start calling in probably about half an hour. No, he already did that.
No way.
There is a war going on for your mind. Media mavens mount surgical strikes from trapper keeper collages and online magazine racks. CoverGirl cutouts throw up pop-up ads infecting victims with silicone shrapnel. Worldwide passenger pigeons deployed paratroopers. Now it's raining pornography. Lovers take shelter. Post-production debutantes pursue you in NASCAR chariots. They construct ransom letters from biblical passages and bleed mascara into the holy water supplies. There is a war going on for your mind. Industry insiders slang test tube babies to corporate crackheads. They flash logos and blast ghettos. Their embroidered neckties say, stop snitching. Conscious rappers and whistleblowers get stitches made of acupuncture needles and marionette strings. There is a war going on for your mind. Professional wrestlers and vice presidents want you to believe them. The desert sky is their blue screen. They superimpose explosions. They shout at you. Pay no attention to the men behind the barred curtain, nor the craters beneath the draped flags. Those hoods are there for your protection, and the medias these days are the size of corpses. There is a war going on for your mind.
All right, we're going to try to get him on the air. We're having a little bit of technical difficulties here, but we're going to get him right now, I think. So we'll see how it goes. Nothing could ever go without technical difficulties.
Hello?
Hey, Greg.
Yo.
Hi, this is Carl, Truth, Love, Freedom Radio
hey.
Show. How's it going?
How you doing, man?
Doing well. Is it a good time now?
Yeah, as good as any. I'm actually driving stuff. I may be a little bit distracted. That's why I'm trying to find some place to get to. So.
Okay, cool. And now, just so you know, Greg Stewart is in a place right now where he doesn't get great cell phone reception. So he said that he was going to have to try to get to a place that would do much better, and I guess he's having a little trouble. But anyways, thank you for coming on the show again. I mean, this is the second time now. And just to let you know, we're going to have people call in a little bit. And to just start it out, and just for the sake of getting as much progress in this as possible, because I really like to get to some deeper topics and not be
stuck.
Yeah, stuff that everybody can just Google. Like I said, the last show we did, I'm tired of people asking dumb questions that just have, you know what I'm saying? There's more important questions to ask, and I'd rather get to those. So let's just run through some of the major questions that people ask, if you would be so kind. First question that you typically get is Freemasonry a religion?
Is Freemasonry a religion? That's a very good question. The typical byline for it is that it is not. That it is more a celebration of religion, mm-hmm. in the sense that it celebrates more the idea of faith, requiring of its membership a degree of faith, at least in America. Although some Masonic authors in the past have said that it is, and in some respects I tend to agree with them in the sense that it's a religion of reason and not necessarily a faith. I've written about that in a few places that sort of talk about those ideas, that, you know, it's not a faith practice that'll tell you one way or the other to believe, yet it's definitely a system of ritual that goes back several hundred years, so right. Certainly carrying forward an idea that's been practiced for some time.
Okay.
Which, I mean, ultimately is the definition of a religion. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, I'm sure everybody here has talked to Freemasons at some time or another that has listened to the show or whatnot. Obviously, there are some Freemasons that disagree with you on this topic, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, there's some that are pretty staunch against any notion that Freemasonry is any way related to religion.
Correct. Absolutely.
Now, do you think that they're incorrect in their assumption, or do you think it's just a matter of opinion and each person can experience differently?
Like anything, I mean, it always comes down to a matter of opinion. You know, that I would say if you were to poll most Freemasons, they would come back and say that it's certainly not a religion. And I think they're doing that, you know, for their own reasons and in some respects for political reasons, just because it's not in vogue really to say that it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and certainly I'm not a spokesman for it and can't make any direct claim. But, you know, again, my opinion is my own. As they say that it's not a religion because, again, it is definitely a fraternity. It's certainly an institution that's really espoused in the last 100 years or so, this collective idea that, you know, men are gathered together of like mind to commit themselves to like work.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, they come to the conclusion that it's not a religion because, again, it's not teaching a faith practice, which it doesn't. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't tell you to believe in Christ, or it doesn't tell you to believe in Catholicism or anything else. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's not a faith practice. And that's kind of where I've had to divorce the two ideas. People like to lump religion and faith together, you know, as in, what's your religion? Well, you know, your religion could be anything. Your religion could be going to a coffee shop every day. No, you do it religiously. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where I've divorced the two ideas and tried to separate them and look at, you know, what does the definition of religion mean? You know, as you go back in the language, what is the root of the word? So mm. the root of the word is to carry forward a practice from antiquity, from the past.
Interesting. Have any insights on that, Justin?
No, so, I mean, so basically, would you say religion and ritual have pretty much the same meaning, or is there a difference in your mind?
To a certain degree, you know, it depends on how it is that you're coming at the two ideas. If mm-hmm. you're coming at the two ideas, you know, as your religion is building on a fundamental idea of faith, then sure, the two ideas are, you know, tied together.
Yeah.
But as just a practice activity, you know?
Yeah.
And many Catholics, are Catholics practicing faith, or are they practicing their religion?
I'm just curious, do you yourself in your kind of personal vocabulary have a way of referring to the practice of faith, the kind of faith side of what is known as religion?
I don't know if I necessarily have a definition or a word for it. I know it's certainly whatever you end up believing in your heart, that tends to be what what your faith is, you know, what you mm-hmm. espouse, the credos and morals that you necessarily come back to. And in that respect, too, Freemasonry could be looked at in that way, and I'm mm-hmm. sure some people do look at it like that.
Mm-hmm.
I personally, again, I don't see anything wrong with it. It's not the typical line that most Freemasons, though, adhere to, because, again, mainstream American religion likes to demonize it that way and say that it's a religious practice, that it's, you know, teaching you something contrary to whatever it is that they're teaching.
Right.
So I think a lot of people, you know, villainize it that way.
Right. Now, when you first did the interview with me and you made statements such as this, there was a little bit of backlash, right, from other Freemasons who were pretty upset about the fact that you said these things. Is that correct?
You know, what's funny is I didn't hear anything personally. No one, you know, I make myself readily available. Anybody wants to send me an email or post on my blog, they're more than welcome to. No one came directly to me and said anything. Now, I remember that there were a lot of comments. I think there was a pretty good download, too. So
yeah.
A lot of people heard it, and a lot of people had the ability to chime in, and a lot of people did. And a lot of people, you know, mainstream Freemasonry contributed and certainly gave their take of it.
Right,
so,
right. Yeah, we're going to do an interview with a gentleman. I think you're doing an interview. I saw your podcast, and it looked like you were doing an interview with him. I'm just right now, I'm not remembering his name. I'm
Tim Bryce? Or
No.
John Radcliffe?
Radcliffe, that's it. Yeah, Mr. Radcliffe. He's going to be doing an interview with us because he said that he had a different opinion about Freemasonry and wanted to share his aspect of it. So in
yep.
a couple of weeks, we're planning on doing one with him. And I even encouraged him to call in tonight and give some insights if he would.
Cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's get down to some business then. I mean, I told everybody you're like probably the most honest Freemason I've ever met. I mean, you're pretty straightforward, and I think you say a lot of things that would be considered somewhat controversial among Freemasons. You know.
Oh, absolutely. Heretical.
Yeah. I'm gonna play a clip here in just a second of a small clip of our last interview with you, where basically we talked about Freemasonry and the elitist aspect of it, if you don't mind, just one second.
Sure.
Whenever I was in agreement with them, they would share a lot more about their views of the world.
Yeah.
And I kind of wonder, you know, do you feel like there's kind of this elitist mentality going on with many Freemasons?
Yes. And I think that it's out of not understanding what it is that they're a part of.
Right.
You know, it's like saying that we're going to war because we're Christians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the fundamental aspect of Christ was not war. You know, it's a misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the main symptom of Freemasonry today,
mm-hmm.
that there is a misunderstanding as to what the teachings are about.
Okay, so did you hear the clip?
Yep.
Okay, so I thought that was a pretty intense admission, and I wonder, like, I really am curious to hear what if you had any response from Freemasons about that. I mean...
You know, nothing. No one's come back to me directly and said anything. But again, I think that's sort of one of the values of Freemasonry is that you're allowed to interpret it as you want.
Mm-hmm.
There's no prescribed way of coming at it.
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's no necessarily there's no lexicon that's gonna, or encyclopedia that's going to say this is absolute and exact of what it is.
Right. Right.
So. You know, hearing it again, that's funny. It was a pretty staunch admission. You know, I think, if anything else, to couch it, I don't think that it's necessarily a bad sort of, I'm trying to think the best way to phrase this. I don't think that it's necessarily a closed loop like that, where
mm-hmm.
where it is so readily, just so readily accepted that way. I don't think that it's exclusionary, and I don't necessarily think that it's an absolute. You know, hearing that, it sounded almost as an absolute statement.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think that it's open. You know, and even just in my own practice and doing stuff, it definitely is open. There's a great receptivity to ideas amongst certain channels.
Mm-hmm. Right?
You know, it's like anything. You find people that are of like mind, and certainly you'll be able to share a discourse on it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So now... And I remember we had talked about this before, but I just kind of want to continue from where we left off, and I hope you don't mind that. I mean, instead of going back over everything that we did, because I think we got pretty far along, and I just kind of want to go even deeper into it and not have to backtrack too much.
Absolutely.
Now, I know let's just run through the questions, because I better do that before I get too deep. Is Masonry a secret society?
Is it a secret society? Define secret society for me, and I'll tell you yes or no.
It's a society of people who ascribe to certain beliefs that they don't make public.
No, it's not a secret society in that definition. It is a closed loop society in the sense that it is not necessarily open to anybody because there are certain conditions that the individual must meet in order to under a Masonic sort of definition, certain things that they sort of need to sort of have in mind already.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly those things aren't made public because that is, again, part of the practice, part of the ritual or the religion of it, and bringing those things to the fore and initiating the individual into them.
Mm.
So in that sense, it is a secret. What's the new line? It's not a secret society, but a society with secrets.
Right, I've heard that line plenty of times. Yeah,
not sure what that means.
Well, yeah, I know it sounds like a little bit like doublespeak, but really, what it means is that it's not secret. And I think I said this last time that the lessons in it are things that you could probably pick up in most of the religions of the world in one aspect or another, or even the philosophy of the world in different areas. You know, mm-hmm. the ideas behind it aren't unique necessarily. It's just what's unique is how it's delivered, and that's what's incumbent on it being a secret society, is that if you were to give it away necessarily or make it readily available, it would very easily be misinterpreted or even distorted.
Hmm.
So it's about a message delivery system.
Right, right. Now, but let's be honest. If I was to get into you can't deliver the message to me unless I'm a Freemason. I mean, I couldn't go through the message retrieval unless I join and promise to not say it to anybody else, right? I mean, doesn't that still qualify it as a secret?
Right. And those are aspects of it that, sure, you can say are secret. But again, it's incumbent on the system. You know, it's how the system was constructed.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Interesting.
You know, it's not like I'm going to tell you how to make free energy or anything. I mean, it's not aspects like that, but it's to group people of like minds so that they're in a similar mode of communication so that there's an understanding.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a Freemason, if you had gone through the system, you coming to me to ask the question would be asinine because you would already have the question and the answers too.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You would have gone through it, and so there wouldn't necessarily be a necessity to divulge a secret of something else. you know what I mean? That's part of the initiatory practice, that you go through the system, you learn these things, and then you develop it. I mean, we could have a great conversation about it and, you know, how we interpret the symbols and what those things mean.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's part of that closed loop. And that's part of what makes it that sort of closed fraternity in a sense, and which many people end up calling a secret society.
Yeah.
You know, a secret society is one in which you have no idea of their existence, no idea of their membership, and no idea of the activities that they conduct. That's a secret society. You know, those are societies that you have no idea about and what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Freemasonry, they parade around in their aprons. They're not a secret. You know where their lodges are? They list them in the yellow pages.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me see. I'm trying to get my thoughts straight. I got so many questions right now. You have no idea. All right. Before I get too deeper on the, I'm going to get much deeper on most of these questions and get more details on it from you, if you don't mind. But I'm going to try to, I'm just going to bite the bullet and I'm going to pass that and go to the next question that typically people ask. Does Masonry worship Lucifer in any way, shape, or form?
No. No, it does not worship Lucifer.
Can you please expand on... I know that this is true because I have read the Masonic books and I understand the context of what they say.
Right.
But I understand...
The first context of the question, okay, it's coming, I guess, with a Christian bent, from a Christian background.
Mm-hmm.
Of anything that's contrary to whatever their form of Christianity espouses. They go to the practices of this open and a new word that's coming about. If I can remember what it is, living here, but they like to say that Freemasonry takes in all these other religions, or it, because it's accepting of all of the faiths, that it makes it this Luciferian sort of conspiracy.
Mm.
No, it's not the case. You know. It's hard when you invest an emotional decision into something, it's hard to divest yourself from the answer. So if you believe something and the others who don't believe what you believe as just being evil, then sure, you're going to say that they worship the devil.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they're just not believing in what you tell them you ought to believe.
But also you have to take into consideration the quotes, right? Which can often – it's pretty easy if you don't understand the context to misinterpret what's said. I mean, you know, you're talking
Absolutely.
About the quotes from Manly P. Hall and Albert Pike, for example.
Right, right. And you know what's interesting is that, you know, and I was thinking about this answer because I know last time I was woefully unprepared for it, and I apologize. But even since then, and I don't know if you had a chance to come about it, there was actually something that I wrote that kind of analyzed it and looked at it a little bit, even broke apart what the phrases that Pike says.
Mm-hmm.
Pike doesn't say that you worship the devil, but Pike specifically, even with a Christian angle to it, is indicating the evils of the devil and the evils of certain aspects of your life being the fruits of the devil. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
So by reading it quick, sure, you can read into it whatever you want, but really you've got to get into the meat of the matter. And look at what he's saying. You know, I think it's in the 19th degree, and I've got it in a book here next to me. But, you know, it's taking out of context something that was meant even as an interpretive to something else.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another aspect to it, is that even what Pike's writing isn't something necessarily that stands on its own. Many people treat it as something on its own when, in fact, it's a commentary to something else.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're reading the instruction manual, or you're reading the description of a whole other object. You know, he's describing and talking about the degree.
Right.
19th degree and something that takes place in it. So it's taking them out of context, which I think many, many of these attractors do. It's very easy to do. I mean, you know, you can villainize anything this moment ago.
Is there a way for someone who's not initiated to take it in context?
Probably not. Mm-hmm. You know, because again, it wasn't written necessarily for an external audience. It
mm-hmm.
wasn't written for, you know, anybody to just pick it up and read it. So you could, and there's a lot of little kernels of wisdom in there. I suppose you could read it and interpret something from it, but really it's meant to go along with something else. It's meant to ride in tandem with something else altogether.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't know if
yeah, you,
you
go
I don't know if you know the answer to this, just as far as history of like the availability of some of these texts. Do you know why they're available publicly? Why, for instance, Carl could get his hands on books like this? Is this just kind of because they've been around and they're floating around, or why would something like that be available?
You mean like specifically like with Dogma, why copies of that would be?
Yeah, yeah.
Or
were they not supposed to be?
Well, I don't want to say they weren't supposed to be, because mm-hmm. that puts something, you know, sinister on it that, you know, people
right.
should be doing away with them. Really, the books were given it out at some point to individuals who went through the Scottish Rite degrees, and at the end of those degrees, they would get this book that would, you know, talk about what they'd just gone through.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happened over time is that as individuals have passed away, or those books have fallen out of copyright protection, they've just fallen into the general public.
Right.
You know, for a long time, you could find them at used bookstores, these big red books under, you know, the occult or esoteric section. And these books, again, were fellows who had passed on, and their spouses or family didn't know what they were, and just, you know, put them right back into the general public.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at some of the old copies of Morals and Dogma, it actually says in there, you know, upon the death of the individual to return it to the Scottish Rite.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, because, again, it's not a strange secret that's inside of it. It's just that people that get it can easily misinterpret it. You know,
yeah.
when you just read it, it won't necessarily make sense to you in a context that you're thinking.
Right.
Okay.
So,
well, if you don't mind, I would like to try to interpret it, and you tell me if I'm either accurate or inaccurate, and tell me why, if that's all right.
To the extent that
okay.
you're able.
Okay. Let me actually read the quote into the extent that I'm able, right? And let's just see here. Okay, I'm going to read it so at least people know in what context we're talking here. The apocalypse is, to those who receive the 19th degree, the apotheosis of the sublime faith which aspires to God alone and despises all the pomps and works of Lucifer. Lucifer, the light bearer, strange and mysterious in name, given to the spirit of darkness. Lucifer, the son of the morning, is it he who bears the light and with its splendors intolerable, blinds feeble, sensual, and selfish souls? Doubt it not. For traditions are full of divine revelations and inspirations, and inspiration is not of one age nor one creed. Plato and Philo also were inspired. So, usually you just get the two sentences. You don't get the whole thing. That's what I
right.
notice when people read it. It's just the Lucifer part.
Right.
All the way up to the doubt it not. But basically what he's saying here is that... Lucifer, son of the morning, he talks about the name, okay? Is he referring to the mistranslation of the word Lucifer actually being the only Latin word in the Bible, which literally means the morning star, which is symbolic of light, and that it's been interpreted as a spirit of darkness, and that's an incorrect assertion?
I don't think that he's meaning that interpretation only. Again, I mean,
right.
it's coming from an era where Christianity was very popular still, so it's not something that I think he just meant for exclusively. I'm looking through my notes here, so if I sound distracted, I'm driving and reading, which I don't recommend anybody to do. part of it, though, is just, let me see. I think there was something that had to do with the definition of apotheosis and how, what his meaning is in this. He's definitely, Pike was a great symbolist, and certainly he was looking at these symbols and pulling from them this sort of philosophical idea.
Mm-hmm.
Again, tracing back with the original term of Lucifer as the light bringer, you know, for Venus, as the herald of the morning sun. So,
mm-hmm.
so certainly he cast Lucifer into a light where he is less than this, you know, horn-headed, pointy-tailed guy. As this entity that is really coming from God, that he was, you know, the right hand of God at one point who coveted his work, and again paid the ultimate price for his misdeeds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a broader spectrum of what Lucifer is about, and you know, not. His role in this text is still a role that that many see him as the devil, as right. the bad guy. It's again in a broader philosophical term of, you know, it's the guy that heralds the light. You know, without the bad, you don't have the good.
Right.
You know, it is yang to the other.
Now, in this context, the light does represent knowledge, does it not?
Yeah, essentially. I mean, that's, you know, many have compared that even to the tree of not the tree of life, but many have compared it even to the apple tree, you know, in the Garden of Eden. You know, it's knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So, light being knowledge.
I have a question for you. Oh, sorry. Go on.
Well, I was just going to finish it by saying, you know, light being knowledge is just, you know, the delivery of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I just had a question about something you just said. I think you said without bad, you don't have good. And mm-hmm. I'm curious, this kind of might sound like a strange question. If you go back to before, you know, your time in Masonry, do you think you would have believed that in the same way, that statement?
Would I have believed it the same way? Probably not. You know, everybody comes to the table with their own set of ideas mm-hmm. and sort of with their own preconception.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not I believed that before, you know, I came from a very Christian background, mm-hmm. raised in Christianity, went to Christian school. I have managed to find myself in the doors of probably a half dozen different style Christian churches at some point or another.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that idea is really anything that's promoted in a standard church.
Right.
You know, they don't necessarily look at a dualistic nature of, you know, of God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a pretty linear sort of, you know, do this and do that, and you'll be fine.
Now, when you say dualistic nature of God, and we're talking about without bad, then you don't have good, and then kind of throwing mm-hmm. Lucifer into the mix, is there some kind of dualistic relationship then between God and Lucifer in this kind of understanding of the world or the universe?
I think you can interpret it as such. Whether mm-hmm. or not Pike was specifically referencing that when he wrote this, you know, you'd have to dig Pike up and ask him.
no, thanks.
I think, but even by taking some context of what he's talking about, you know, it's the bringer of the light. You know what I mean? So what's bringing this morning sun?
Right.
What's raising the light? So, again, without evil, is it possible to have good?
Right.
Interesting. Okay, let's move on to other questions here. And we'll get back to other stuff later. I'm sure you're going to get some of these similar questions when people call in. If people call in, we'll see what happens. is Masonry a Gnostic establishment, and or does it promote Gnosticism?
Wow, that's a loaded question. Is it a Gnostic establishment, and does it promote Gnosticism? Part and parcel by itself, no. Part and parcel by itself, it is essentially a degreed fraternity that espouses to make good men better. Are there aspects of Gnosticism in it? I definitely think that you could say that there is. Mm-hmm. Where those are or what that is probably open to a lot of interpretation. But I think that there are aspects of it that certainly seem to lend themselves that way.
Okay. How does it make a good man better, by the way? I hear that all the time, and I just don't really... I know that there's some kind of morality taught in all this stuff, that they have symbols and yada yada, but... What is it? What does Masonry do to make a man better? I'm just wondering.
Sure, and you know, and John, when you speak to John, he'll really be able to elaborate on this.
Uh-huh.
Essentially, Freemasonry is a series of morality plays that strive to impart symbolic and allegorical lessons to teach people who are already of a good nature how to make themselves better. How to look at themselves, look at their life, and how they apply that life to other people, and what they do in that life to do better than themselves, better than the work that they're doing,
mm-hmm.
and to promote this, you know, betterment of humanity, mm-hmm. betterment of mankind. Mm-hmm. That's why they call it or say what they do, is to make good men better, because you can make bad men better. Would they necessarily get or appreciate the lesson? It's questionable. You know, would they try to make that a part of their regular daily life?
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, it's questionable. Maybe some, maybe none.
Now, another question I get is that we know that Masonry has certain blood oaths that one must take when they climb the degrees. And
mm-hmm.
I guess the question that you get is, more? I mean, the question that I usually hear is, does Masonry kill people who reveal the secrets of Masonry as described in those blood oaths? And I just want to do a little insight here, just a little thing here. A gentleman who runs an anti-Masonic website, or what would be classified as anti-Masonic, I have a hard time with that term, because, but I've been accused of being anti-Masonic myself.
The new term, if I can put it out there, and this was actually devised recently, is Masonic phobia or Masonphobia.
Masonphobia. Okay. Yeah. I can accept that. So, you know, the there was a gentleman who runs a website. I'm not going to say which one, and I honestly, if I have to think pretty hard to remember which one it was, but he was sent an email by a Freemason from a Freemason blog, right, that he had been in a conversation with for a long period of time, and he started revealing the secrets of Freemasonry, basically, the names of God or the lost word of Masonry, you know, whole thing. And he was basically cursed by the guy. I read it. It was pretty intense. And he basically wished on him the same kind of, punishment that you would get had you taken the oath. And I thought that was really suspicious. Like, why? You know, like, first of all, he's cursing him in a very learned fashion, let me tell you. But it was a curse nonetheless. And, you know...
When you curse, I mean, are you talking about "I curse you"? Or he literally, yeah. Like some gypsy curse with a squinty eye.
It was something to the effect that "I curse you, that for revealing the divine secrets of the blah blah blah, you are going to be cast into the sands of the sea and blah, have your whatever torn out." And it was pretty creepy, honestly. To be perfectly honest with you.
Wow. There's really only one big anti-Masonry site out there, although there are a few others that certainly that run close seconds.
Right. It may have been Illuminati Archive or Mace. What was it called?
Freemason Watch.
What now?
Freemason Watch. Is that the
Freemason Watch? That's it. That's the one.
Yeah, that's the big one. What's funny is I'd actually love to talk to the guy who runs that blog too, or the website blog. I don't know what it is anymore.
Right.
It'd be interesting to have a conversation with him.
I tried to set up something with you, and he turned it down.
Did he really?
Yeah, he turned it down. He said he wasn't interested in doing it. And I was surprised myself. I was almost sure it was in the, you know, when once you had accepted it, I thought this is going to be an interesting conversation.
But he said no. Down on the table. I'm more than down with it. I'd love to talk to him. And, you know, again, even if we agree at the end to disagree, or, you know, curse me to the devil, whatever, it'd be fun to have that conversation.
Yeah, definitely.
But to go back to your question, to my knowledge, no Mason has ever killed anyone for ever divulging the secrets of anybody. There's a very old tale that goes back to the early 1800s.
Right, Captain William Morgan.
Captain Morgan.
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds like an alcohol drink.
Yeah, it is. Good old Captain my favorite Morgan. One.
And,
spiced rum.
And the Masons of New York, who they say, you know, did everything from hang, drown, quarter, you name it. I mean, the stories abound on it. Mm-hmm. There's an interesting book, the Freemasons by Jasper Ridley, has a very interesting analogy to it. And I'm not sure if we talked about it last time, but even just to touch on it briefly, essentially, what took place there very likely could have been a bunch of very bad Masons killing him because they were just jerks and didn't really get it.
Right.
I could take the other end of it and say there's no proof. No, I've never been part of it. I can tell you with a degree of surety that the institution does not represent that and would never do that.
Mm-hmm.
To reveal secrets, No, I would never kill somebody for them wanting to tell their wife or to let a slip of the tongue happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and who's this jury or this executioner that comes down to get you?
Mm-hmm.
But no, and the simple answer is no. And whether or not this person received a curse on them, Carl, I curse you to get $1 million tomorrow.
I appreciate
you
that.
You know what I mean?
I can definitely use it right now.
What's a curse? There's no ritual practice of magic here. I mean, unless you've fallen into some other systems. But even then, I just find it really hard to believe. I think sometimes people allow their superstitions to overtake them and lose sight of their reason.
Mm-hmm.
in trying to just think about and talk about some of these things. You know, they get hung up in this idea that, you know, there's some degree of malfeasance behind it,
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, there's a boogeyman that's going to wait in the bushes to come and get me.
Right. Okay, I want to just go ahead and ask a few more questions and then move on so we can start taking calls because it's already starting to get pretty late. Talking
sure.
to you can go really quick. So, is there a higher order than the 33rd degree? Whether it be another body that's connected. Actually, we have a call coming in right now. Let's go ahead and take that call if it's all right with you because I don't want to lose the possibility here.
Sure, go for it.
You're on the air, caller. Hello.
Hello, this is Lucifer, the Morning Star. And I just wanted to say that I'm a little bit depressed.
Why is that?
You get me wrong every time.
Do I?
I want to commend your Freemasonry buddy who was on the show for not revealing the true secrets of Freemasonry, because he too will have his right breast pierced by the masterful lodge members.
Okay. Lucifer, did you have a question?
I would like for your Freemason friend to explain the true nature and the beauty of the Morning Star.
Greg?
Could you repeat the question, Vanna?
I think it's pretty hard. I'm having a hard time understanding them myself. He wants to know if you can explain the true nature and beauty of the Morning Star.
Wow, the true nature and beauty of the Morning Star.
Excuse me?
How about this?
Okay.
Is there a virtuous Morning Star?
Is there a virtuous Morning Star?
Is there a virtuous Morning Star? I'm sure someone in Freemasonry has written about one there being a virtuous Morning Star. You could certainly look at Venus as being a Morning Star, a virtue, because it does bring the light of the sun. And that it precedes the dawning. Whether or not it's been committed in text as some symbolic element, offhand, I don't know.
Okay.
Sorry, sir.
All right. Anything else, Lucifer?
No, that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take care, Lucifer. All right, so let me go ahead and continue on this question. Just so you know, the phones are open. If you want to call in, please do. The number is 1-877-REVERE-0. That's 1-877-738-3730. Give us a call, and we'll get you on the air, and you can ask Greg Stewart, 32nd degree of the Scottish Rite, any question that you desire. So back to the – excuse me?
Except for my bank account.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, they could always ask. It doesn't mean you have to give it to them. Is there a higher order than the 33rd degree, whether it be another body like the Illuminati is claimed or something
else?
As a body that can claim lineage to it, none of that I've come to see.
Uh-huh.
There
are bodies connected.
A lot of different... I'm sorry?
There are bodies that claim to be connected or at least somewhat related to Freemasonry that kind of take on the same form but aren't part of the actual Mother Lodge, right?
Or, yes. There are. Whether or not they claim a lineage to Freemasonry, in particular like the, you know, the OTO, the Ordo Templi Orientis, and I think that's the big one. You know, the Thelemas and the like, they certainly draw from the heritage of it. Even in some texts that I've read say that they incorporate, you know, all of the aspects of Freemasonry and then, you know, espousing them from there. But again, back to the question, there's no specific organization to my knowledge. Now, whether or not there's, you know, ancillary degrees that someone's come up with or, you know, arms of the organization that you know, are you have to be a 33rd in order to be a part of it, sure, they may exist, to my knowledge, though, and if they exist, they're not a part of regular mainstream Freemasonry.
Okay.
I guess is the best, shortest answer then.
Okay. Interesting. But, I mean, we got into this topic before. I mean, and I told you, I'm going to harass you a little bit. I hope you don't mind.
Yeah, go for it. Not at all.
Okay, 33rd degree, what is the title of that degree?
You know what? I couldn't tell you. I'm not a 33rd.
It's called Master... Master of the Royal Secret, is it not?
Hang on, I'll have to tell you. The actually, Morals and Dogma only goes up to 32nd.
Right.
And at that point, it stops because, again, I mean, that you know, the highest degree. The 33rd, one thing to keep in mind about the 33rd is that it's an honorary degree given to individuals of the fraternity. So it's not like, you know, let me just join and maybe one day I'll be a 33rd. You pretty much have to work for the rite that you're a part of and for Scottish Rite in general. Ooh, that's a red light. Hello. Sorry.
No problem. Take it easy out there. We don't want you to die before we get over this interview.
It's going to be that hit squad coming to get me. It's an honorary title. So you know, really, it's 32nd, and then there's some subordinate degrees under the 32nd that you know, start to elevate you. And the ranks and the ranking system is really, again, just, you know, merit of service. So as you conduct yourself and give back to the community of which you're part of, they recognize it and promote again accordingly.
Mm.
33rds are very rare. You know, within a particular place, there may be only a handful. It's not like, if, you know, here you paid your dues for a year and you're a 33rd now. Mm. It doesn't work like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, really, 33rds, from my experience, are stand-up guys. Guys that you would say are some of the most virtuous and you know, well-read, intelligent people that you'll meet.
Right.
Because, yeah. I mean, again, it's hard to become a 33rd, but I mean, you have to contribute and give service to the craft of Freemasonry and Scottish Rite in order to attain that title, mm-hmm. that rank.
Right.
So,
interesting. Okay.
And so, you know, I'm gonna go the parking lot, and oh, now I have a place to stop.
Oh, nice. Perfect. Nice. Now we're gonna really pour it on you, then.
Please.
Now it's time to get tough, man. All right. So. Knowledge, light and knowledge. Let's talk about that, because that's very important in Freemasonry. Everywhere I go, all the Freemason books I have, light and knowledge are constantly being used and referred to one another. And light is knowledge, according to Freemasonry. Is that correct?
Yeah, as a general definition, yes.
Okay.
Light as an illumination. You're being illuminated to something. So as allegories go, you can connect them symbolically. Light, illumination, knowledge, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. So, if Lucifer is represented as light, and light is knowledge, knowledge is good, I'm assuming. Does that not also mean that Lucifer is good?
Lucifer is acknowledged as a light bringer. Right?
I tried, okay. I tried to catch you on that one. All right. The light bringer. But that's still good, because he's bringing you knowledge, is he not? I mean, come on,
he's
man.
He's bringing whatever the knowledge is. He's bringing whatever vessel of thing is carrying the knowledge with it.
But is it good?
Like,
but is it good?
Well, I don't know. It depends on how you use it. Is anything good or is anything bad, you know? With the whole yin and yang thing, the opposite.
Come on, Greg. Give me a break here, dude. No. All right, I understand. I'm trying. All right. Okay, so let me get my book open, my Morals and Dogma.
All right, good. I got mine now, too.
Did you ever find out what the 32nd degree name is by any chance? Or?
Yeah, I did, actually. I think he said it. What did you say it was?
Sublime Prince of the Royal Secret.
32nd is the Master of the Royal Secret in the edition that I have, which is edition from... Let me see... I don't think they would have changed it, but like any institution, they make changes occasionally to things too. So
right, mine's 1969.
Mine is a copyright 1950, mm-hmm. Reprint 1952. So.
So it's called Master of the Royal Secret.
That is correct.
Okay. So. Can you tell us what the secret is? That the 32nd degree is about? Or is that part of the secret?
It's still part of the overall system of needing to be a member in order to understand it. If I told you, would you be able to understand it?
You can try. Give me a shot, man. You never know.
I've read
a lot of books.
Well, you know, as they say, the secret is that there is no secret. How's that for answering a question with a question?
Oh, my God.
You know, I can't... It's the specifics... I mean, I can get into the specifics, and we can talk about what Pike says in the book and his analysis of it. Because, again, remember, morals and dogma is what Albert Pike... what his opinion was of the degrees. So it's not the degrees themselves, and it's not necessarily even what the degrees convey. I've been going through the degrees in a study program and comparing them to what he says, and he's not always spot on to whatever it is that the particular degree tells you, or he only focuses on an aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in a broader sense, you have to remember that Freemasonry is a system of symbol and allegory. So it's a very broad subset of things that you can interpret into a variety of different ways.
Okay. So, okay, let's get into another topic that's really popular. The symbol on the back of the dollar bill being Masonic. Now, first, let me just yes or no question real quick, and we'll get into it a little bit more in a second. You can feel free to add some information. But is that a Masonic symbol, yes or no? Did Masons put it there? Let's put that. I know it's Masonic because there's Masonic symbols I've seen in all the books. But did Freemasonry or people in Freemasonry have a conscious decision to put it there, basically?
Did they have a conscious contribution to it? You know, just as a preface to this, I think Manly Hall, he wrote a very interesting analysis of that symbol on the bill and likened it very much to the Masonic Institution and to the symbology of Masonry. And to a degree, sure, the symbols on there could be interpreted in a Masonic fashion. Is the symbol itself on the bill like a conspiracy for Masonry? No. An eminent Mason in its first design wanted to put a turkey on it. One of the biggest Masons of the day wanted to put a turkey as that symbol. Another one wanted to put Moses, was it Moses parting the sea?
Right.
So the symbol itself, as it stands, in my understanding and my research, it's not a Masonic symbol.
Okay.
There are aspects of it that lend itself to Masonry. Aspects that in other traditions have tried to glom onto it. Certainly there are some very symbolic aspects. So maybe as a symbol itself or as a grouping of symbols, you could say that it has Masonic tendencies to it.
Mm-hmm.
But the symbol itself is not a Masonic symbol, no.
Okay. Now, are you familiar with the term the New World Order?
Yeah.
You know what the implications of the wording is as far as
Absolutely.
People can tell. Okay, could you tell me, number one, what your idea is about what that symbol, what those words mean to you, and then also tell me about whether or not you are in agreement with that ideology?
A New World Order, from my understanding, is really the sense that it's sort of one government entity in control of the world, and many people liken it to, you know, subjugating the masses to a degree of slavery, in a sense of control via economics, via education and whatnot. The New World Order is supposed to be this organization that started as a shadowy organization. Some take it back as far as the Illuminati, as these groups that have gathered together to overthrow governments into this single, I presume, kingly society ruled by somebody or ruled by nobody. I think once you start getting into the structures of it and start looking at really what a New World Order would represent, it sort of falls apart as into who this ruling class would be. Is it the ruling elite or some other, you know, the rich people of the world? That's my understanding of it.
Does it have any...
Second part of the question?
Oh, go on. And what is your opinion about what the New World Order is? Do you agree with it or not?
I don't tend to find myself as someone who agrees with the idea that there's a takeover taking place by a quote unquote New World Order.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might be a moniker that's been associated with something that is doing something in some ways similar to that. But I think just by an analysis of economics and corporations, you can kind of see where the greed's taking place and, you know, the degree to which public education's fallen apart, specifically in this country or even in the subjugation of other countries. You know, we buy Chinese-made products for dirt cheap and sell them at a huge markup and profit to corporations that are making a boatload of money.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, yeah, there's some issues of control that are taking place.
Mm-hmm.
So... Okay. Whether or not it's, you know, a broader-based conspiracy to do it, a boardroom meeting of a bunch of, you know, businessmen could be a conspiracy to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that the New World Order? I don't know. I tend not to find myself as a conspiracy theorist. I don't
right.
like.
Well, I guess
I don't look for that.
I mean, I guess my idea was: are you in agreement with the New World Order is to most people, and what that most people consider like the conspiratorial view, or do you think the New World Order is actually something different? And maybe do you not know what the New World Order is? I mean, other than what you've heard from them, or?
Well, I mean, besides the ideas of like the Bilderbergers and the old oil barons from the 20s, the Rockefellers and all that. I haven't dug deeply into it just because I think it's oftentimes a matter of just chasing your own tail. You know, it right. becomes a 21st century or a 20th century scary story for adults. You know, you're going to be controlled by some unseen government or corporate entity. All right, you know.
Well, I mean,
sit down and watch TV, and sure, you're being controlled by an unseen government entity.
Right. I hear what you're saying, but I mean, you got to take into consideration too that many, many very powerful leaders are quoted multiple times as using the term the New World Order. It's in, I mean, I published plenty of them on my website. Every time I get the terms New World Order used. And, you know, I've seen New World Economic Order. I've seen New Economic Order without the world in it. I've seen, you know what I'm saying? So they're
sure,
talking about...
Even on the money. I mean, it's, a new order of the ages. That's
right.
We'll translate that New World
right.
Order.
Bush did a speech. He said the New Order of the Ages. They were acting on an ancient hope that was meant to be fulfilled. These people are talking about something. I mean, and maybe if you don't want to look at it from the conspiratorial viewpoint, which is that there's all this stuff automatically attributed to it, that you would at least... admit that there's something called the New World Order that they are talking about.
To a degree, I mean, I think you could stretch it to say any organization that wants to espouse their idea globally could considerably be a New World Order, right? So any corporate body that wants to have everybody follow along their plan can be construed as potentially a contributor to the New World Order, right? I mean, if you wanted everybody in the world to listen to your show, I mean, that would be a New World Order of everybody listening to the show.
That's a good question. Let me think about that for a
second.
What
I mean?
I don't know if I can agree with that, but yeah, I hear what you're trying to say, but I would agree with that. But
right. Well, I guess where I'm going with it is that I have no doubt that at some point, you know, especially in the early 20th century, late 19th century, that there was an idea to try to broaden the free markets and the sense of having this wider world of trade and economic control spread to the world, because of course they want to make money and they want to continue the revenue flows and build on this idea of people buying products. You know, the switch from a gold standard to a currency standard, a paper currency standard, shifting the capital of the power. So they want to broaden that. They want to broaden their market. And that ends up, I think, being oftentimes misconstrued as this idea of a new world order, you know, a new order of the ages of control.
Okay.
You know, is that an assumption that no one's in control of themselves?
I wouldn't say that so. I would just say that when I think about the new world order, I just think about it in the literal term of what they're saying. I don't apply any of those ideas to it, but I do see that those aspects are there. Like you say new world order, you're talking about a new... what's the word new mean? What's a world order? You know, it's a new world order. That's just kind
of
how
I old world order of, you know, darkness or ignorance or you know, closed markets, what have you. Maybe if you give me a read of what your interpretation is of it, and I can maybe compare the two.
Well, my interpretation of it is based upon what I've read from other people. So it's not like I've, you know, it's not a conjuring of I don't attach a lot of what most people attach to it. I just look at it for what it is, and then... You know, I just consider the possibility that it could be all these other things too. But like, let's look at, like, I've got this news report. I don't have it with me right now. I wish I did. But basically, they did a report talking about a new world order, and it was after the Bush administration came to office, and they were talking about, I'm talking about Bush Jr., Bush 2, the first Bush. They played a clip of his dad saying that he was talking about, he quoted as saying the new world order. I remember he's talking about the big idea, a new world order where, you know, peace and whatever will reign. I don't remember exactly what he said. And then Bush Jr. comes and they talk about Bush Jr. and how he's going into the Middle East, and the new world order, they explained, was a time in history when there was two major world powers in control of the world, one being the United States, the other being Russia. That was during the Cold War. But in the new era, the new world order was a nation that was in rule of every nation, where the most powerful one in the world, and that there was no longer bilateral power in the world. That's what he was saying. But he even made it sound like it's really, it could be this or it could be that. I mean, even the report itself didn't specify exactly what it meant. It just kind of hinted that that's what it could be. But then I get into like things like this. You got Alice Bailey. Let me go ahead and read this to you. You're familiar with Alice Bailey, are you not?
Offhand, no, but maybe the idea. Let me hear the idea now.
Okay, well, Externalization of the Hierarchy is a book. Alice Bailey is considered one of the founders of New Age religion. And okay. Her husband was a Freemason. I think he was a 33rd degree Freemason. And she was a member of Masonry herself. She has in her book Steps Towards the New World Order. Okay? And let me explain, and I'll just kind of stop here and there, and we'll talk about it. In contradiction to the totalitarian world order, what should the rest of the world plan? Towards what world objectives should democracies work? Utopian schemes, idealistic forms of government, and cultural living processes have ever been the plaything of the human mind down through the centuries. But these utopias have been so far ahead of possibility that their presentation seems useless. They are, most of them, wholly impractical. Certain immediate possibilities and attainable objectives can, however, be worked out given a definite will to good and a patience on the part of humanity. Now, stop there. Basically, and this is the idea that I get from most of what I read, and when they talk about the New World Order, they don't really say what it is, but they always apply it to certain things. Usually when they talk about economics, it's the New World Economic Order. Basically what they're referring to is a future world that's going to be coming about. And it always has like these really intense utopian ideals going on of this idea that they're going to create the perfect economic system and the perfect type of government to rule over people. And the, you know what I'm saying? There's all, and she even says right there, it's utopian in essence, right. but it was so far. I mean, they basically were saying it's so far not possible, but and she lays down the steps to help create it so that at a future time it will come about. That's my idea of what the New World Order is. When I hear people say New World Order, what I think they're referring to is a utopian society.
Okay.
Now.
I don't disagree with that. Okay.
Now, remember we talked about this on our last interview. I talked about how I believe that there's like this utopian idealism going on, and I think it's very dangerous. Because in essence, and you even agreed with this, in essence, for a utopia to exist, it must include the elimination of any other kind of viewpoint, because you know one person's utopia is another person's nightmare. You know, Christian utopia is one where the Christian church rules over the world and everyone's Christian. You know, somebody who's an atheist has a humanist utopian idea, and it's going to be quite the opposite. And so there is no way to have a utopia without other people's rights being infringed upon, but yet these people continue to pursue it. And that's the fundamental aspect of what I think the New World Order is.
The pursuance of these utopian ideas, of all those utopian ideas, not parts of it.
Right. It's everyone's New World Order is going to be different. Right. I believe there's a certain type of New World Order that's coming about because the people who are in control of things in this world and they have tight knit links to each other all have a similar vision. And I've read it in their books, which that's when people start applying all these different ideas, because like if you read like Zbigniew Brzezinski's book, for example, and he talks about the New World Order, about being an order that comes out of chaos, which I find very interesting because that's order ad cal you're familiar with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and even to take that same idea, if you want to really distill it back all the way, I mean, it's really the difference between like a Platonic idea and a Aristotelian idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know? And, most of the books that I read from people, they always refer to Plato and all them and the mystery schools, and that's supposedly where Freemasonry comes from. So most people think that the Freemasonry, I tend to agree with them, that Freemasonry, whether or not it's directly rooted in or it has attributes of it, of this mystery school religion, it's a philosophy that came about during the Enlightenment. New World Order has been around. This utopian idea has been around for a long time. But now we have the kind of technology today where, the idea of controlling the world was not possible, unless you just went around seizing governments militarily. Now you can use different types of coercion through education. And she even says that one of her steps is to get into the educational system, change the minds of the people, blah, blah, blah. This is where it all comes in. This is where it all feeds in. That's when you get into all the theories about how it's being done. And some of them's not theories. I mean, some of these guys literally state this is what they're doing. They don't make any, they're not being
secretive
in any way, shape, or form. You can go buy their books at Borders.
Right.
So, I mean, that's where I think the New World Order is, and feel free to make a comment on it if you do.
I guess in just really a commentary kind of way, I don't necessarily disagree with you. I think in some respects that there are aspects of, a utopian society would be great. I stand behind what I said last time, is that you're right. It does definitely preclude others. Mm-hmm. You know, it has to usurp the rights of others in order to make itself strongly manifested.
Mm-hmm.
If you look back to other texts, though, to Bacon's New Atlantis and these ideas of utopia, maybe from the surface read, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of oppression going on, but there's certainly a lot of rules and regulations as to how they have to live and govern their society. You know, and even going back to a lot of the different utopic stories, I don't know how many of you have ever, you know, besides the analysis of them, actually looked at these utopias. They do seem almost like a perfect society, almost like a city-state unto itself of its function and purpose. But they seem a little bit too far-fetched to ever even be a reality. So I think perhaps, you know, as society goes, we strive for those things, knowing that they're never achievable, that they will never be achieved, though the precepts of them, you know, a better education system, a better health system, taking care of one of another.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I think those things aren't necessarily fundamentally bad ideas.
Right, fundamentally they're not bad to some extent, but like, you take into consideration some of the people who are in our government today. I mean, I think, I don't know what your political, what you are politically. Are you a Democrat, Republican?
Actually, I'm a libertarian.
Libertarian, interesting, okay. I'm more on the libertarian side of things myself. So, you know, you take these, who's in power now, and whether or not you believe that there's a link between many of the, what's considered, and again, I hate to throw out terminology that that people use because I automatically get cast into a box with them. But the terminology is the power brokers and these mm-hmm. people who have basically control of the economy and the control of corporations and yada and so forth.
Sure. Interest. Hey, always in all these things, you have to kind of follow the money interest to it. Where is the money going and where is it coming from and what's the interest behind it?
Right.
You know what I mean? That's fundamentally, and when you look at these things, you have to realize that it comes down to, I don't want to say greed necessarily in the control of some of these things, but I mean, it's money.
Mm-hmm.
Money seems to be a big interest behind a lot of it. The people in power want to stay in power with the money that they have.
Right.
I mean, do you concur?
I totally concur, but they're pursuing things beyond just securing their power. I mean, there is an aspect to it where I'm more interested not so much in what is being done, but the reason why they're doing it. I dig into the philosophy, and that's where Freemasonry kind of collides with what's going on in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Because I told you before, I look at Freemasonry as being a sort of elitist mentality being taught. I really do. I think some of the ethics are elitist, and it's in essence.
I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
To a certain extent, I follow what you're saying. And I think in some ways that you can look at Freemasonry as that sort of closed-loop society, as we said earlier, that is striving for a utopian sort of existence,
mm-hmm.
in that it's, you know, it has an education system and it has, you know, its moral precepts and then also even a chain of the democracy of how it's supposed to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Within itself, but all for the betterment of that society, you know, all for the continuance of the society. I mean, society exists, it's existed for a long time with these sort of operations going on. And so I could see how you could liken it to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And many of these individuals, I don't know if many, but some of these individuals have come from this system and have taken these ideas and brought it into it. You know, even in the formation of this country, they're bringing, you know, the democratic ideas
mm-hmm.
of a lodge into a broader spectrum of, you know, let's let the population have this ability. So I think there are some parallels. Whether or not it's a manifestation of a broader sort of conspiracy to mm-hmm. let's make the whole world like the Masonic fraternity, I don't know if I would agree.
Right.
Some of the ideas certainly could have crossed current. But again, I don't necessarily see the two as the same.
Right. I don't see it as they're making the whole world like a fraternity, like Masonry. But what I see happening is I'm trying to. I have a lot of ideas going on. I'm trying to simplify as much as possible. I see what is going on is that at the beginning of our country, there were two factions within Freemasonry doing battle with one another. One faction believed in the possibility of a utopian society that was guided by the rules of independence, that we could, by the people, by having the rights and the freedom, would be responsible enough to handle freedom, and that they could pursue and create a government of the people that would flourish. Okay. There was this other faction of people who did not agree with that. They thought that people were generally stupid, that they were more enlightened, and that they should be guided by people who were more civil. Okay. And I saw that this conflict was going on, but they recognized the reality that they were not going to be able to create any government out of America without, because at that point, nobody wanted centralized government. So they had to compromise. But mm-hmm. I feel like that within this philosophy that has been developing over time, and from what I have read, and I can't, like, I have to pull out all kinds of books because I'm not good at memorizing quotes, that basically the idea was to pursue a world where an enlightened group of people would rule. And I like I said, there's definitely aspects of that makes sense. I'm not saying that there doesn't. But who says who's enlightened? You know, everybody thinks they're enlightened.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think that the early idea of enlightenment was property ownership. You know, it was a masculine. If you owned property, then you were considered as the voting right.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I mean, it was initially. I mean, at that point in time, I think you're looking at a divestiture from one system to another. So they were figuring it out as they went.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it part and parcel like a lodge? Eh. I think the ideas though behind it about this sort of, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it ended up being the guide for it though.
Mm.
Don't you think? I mean, I think it took into account all those things, but I mean, even as we see today with the percentage of the voting population, only half of the eligible voters voting.
Right.
You know, if you give this sort of ability to them, let them take it, and then they can do with it as they see fit, whether or not they want to vote or not.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's participatory, so it requires you to participate in it.
Absolutely. And, you know, it does frustrate me that half the population doesn't vote, but also I recognize that for several years now, we never really had a true democratic form of government. I mean, so that's kind of like, I can see and understand the frustration of people where they feel like their vote really doesn't matter. And, you know, I think it's partly because of a group of people who have been working to isolate people from power and from influence within the government, and
maybe
know,
but the bigger spectrum to that, I think, and I'm not a politico, you know, I'm probably the worst person to try to talk about this, but the other end of it is that your right isn't necessarily just to vote. Your right is to encourage others to vote, to go out and participate and encourage others to do the same. You know what I mean? Your right doesn't stop just by going, okay, I'm going to go to the ballot box today and put my vote in. It's, mm-hmm. it's to encourage others to do that, you know? So,
right.
So even of those that vote, how many of those are out there encouraging others to vote or offering to drive people to the polling places? Or you know what I mean?
Right.
We want to limit our participation in something and expect the best when we don't put in our effort to achieve that better.
Right. Well, let me ask you something. You said you're a libertarian. Did you plan on voting for Ron Paul, or did you support Ron Paul?
I liked him. You know, I've liked the Libertarian Party. I've had some closer dealings with the closer Libertarian Party here locally to me in L.A. Had even thought about running for elected office, but I don't know if I like the philosophy behind the party.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the losers that go to the party knowing that they're going to lose. It doesn't seem to me that they put their effort into trying to win. They just want to try to build the party.
Right.
So I liked what Ron Paul had to say. Sure, I didn't follow him too closely because I frankly knew that he wasn't going to get very far. So,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, understandable. So who are you voting for, if you don't mind me asking? I know that may be personal to you, but I'm interested to know.
Who am I voting for? I can say with the degree of assurity that I won't vote for a libertarian candidate because I don't necessarily want to vote in a party that I know is going to lose, which is probably horrible to say as a libertarian, but you know, that's the outlook. I have a leaning towards Obama because I do believe in some of the rhetoric that he speaks tonight, that he can be a catalyst for change in some respects. And I'm not very happy with the way the Republican Party has been running things. So, you know, it's a toss. It's hard. You know, what aspects of my philosophy gels closest to the candidate? And I think it leans towards Obama.
Okay.
I tend to prefer. I don't like a government welfare or a government save, but I think there are certain things that the government needs to provide, just as we have, you know, police being provided by our local governments and fire provided by our local governments. I think there are things that our federal government should also be providing, which include, you know, a broader health care for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a certain degree of the leadership that we entrust our our power to be able to help us take care of us.
That's interesting. That's pretty much outside the libertarian scope.
It's very, very much so, and it actually kind of put off the local libertarians here, that they didn't necessarily like that was my idea, but were willing to try to work with me to figure out how to do that.
Interesting.
You know, which goes back to that whole utopian idea, or, you know, even some Rosicrucian ideas of going out and doing well for the populace that you're a part of. That's sort of the responsibility of being a Freemason, is that you're responsible for contributing back into society. Your job is to better society, not tear it down.
Right.
So, you know, betterment being, you know, health and welfare, betterment being education,
mm-hmm.
Betterment being, you know, just more civic mindedness. You know, pay attention to what you're doing. Don't just take from the community good. Contribute to it.
Right.
You know, what do you, for as much as you take out of it, what do you give back to it? Besides taxes. I mean, taxes everybody gives, but what do you give of yourself to it?
Right. Okay, this is the Truth, Love, Freedom radio show on Revere Radio Network. We are at 4:25. That's Pacific time, and I think it's 8:25 Eastern or 9:25, something like that. I think it's 8:25 Eastern. We are taking calls if you're interested in speaking with Greg Stewart, and we've only had one call, and it was from Lucifer, believe it or not. but we have a open lines. The number here is 1-877-REVERE-0. That's REVERE-0. Or the regular number is 1-877-738-3730. We're taking calls. Please call in if you're interested in asking Greg any questions. In the meantime, I'm going to continue to hackle him. yeah, I guess. So, and, you know, I don't have, like I said, any disagreements with Freemasonry for what it is in its, you know, surface level of, you know, being a fraternity where people of a certain belief come together. I just know that within that fraternity, whether intended or not, there is in fact a group of people who basically think that they're something special. You know, they really look at and that's the problem, is that when I talk to them, in person, the what I get out of them is like, oh, like I'm their little pupil, like they're like the grandmaster guru, and you know, and it's like. And I despise that mentality, because it is an elitist view of the world, that you are somehow more enlightened. And you may be wiser, but I think that there's a hum aspect of humility that should come with that. And it just doesn't seem to be present there, whether, you know, like I said, intended or not. I happen to think that there's philosophies in the Freemason Lodge that are being taught through the symbols. I mean, and that's kind of where my disagreement is in an essence, but it definitely extends further than that. Like, for example, one thing that really frustrates me is how I want to get into the symbols with you. I want to get into the words, and I want to get into the philosophy, because what if the philosophy that's being taught is wrong? What if the symbols are teaching something bad and you just don't know it? There's no room for me to pursue that with you, or to, you know what I'm saying, to be included in the debate without actually joining and promising secrecy, which is it's frustrating. You know what I'm saying?
Philosophic society. That puts us on a common surface, though, to be able to discuss them. You know what I mean? That's the whole thing of it being in someone else's hand to interpret them how they want to, in a very open sort of sense. You know, that's the reason for it. So that it doesn't become just, you know, fodder for, I think this is right and that's wrong, and this is teaching a wrong thing. You know, I mean, in a specific way, I mean, we can certainly discuss generalities of you know, the things that you see as being potentially bad or having a negative connotation to it. In my experience to this point thus far, I haven't come across anything, though,
okay,
that's like that. You know, it's like Lego pieces. You have to kind of assemble them to see the bigger picture.
Right.
And the way of assembling it is by becoming a part of it and partaking of it, and,
okay,
you know, and exploring it outside of that.
Well, let's be general then. Maybe we can get into some of it without getting specific, where you're not forced to reveal anything. Are you anywhere, Justin? You want to?
No, I'm good.
Okay, go. I'm just making sure my Cody's.
I'm still here.
Okay, he's just kind of quiet. So basically, like the main central theme behind Freemasonry that I see. Let me get into that in a second. Basically, say you have a religious view, and I believe, and I think we've talked about this before, that there is somewhat, if not completely, a religious view being taught through Freemasonry. And you could say no, but I would have to debate you on that, because I think that there is. And, you know, you even confessed earlier that you're more on the aspect of believing that it's a religious institution than other people. But you know, to get into the what the religion is and what the religion is teaching, let's just say, for example, that that religion happens to be a false one. Okay, I'm not saying that I'm you know, debating any particular religious viewpoint, although I have my own. I never confess it because it's not a religious show. If I wanted to debate, you know, say the essence of God and who God really is, and if there is a correct religion or if there isn't or whatever, you know what I'm saying? That type of debate does not seem to be welcome because of the way the structure of the institution is set up. It's basically, you know, you adhere to our principles by engaging in the ritual that is teaching you lessons that you may or may not agree with, but you're not allowed to debate whether or not those rituals are accurate or fair or wrong, or, you know what I'm saying, that there's no... It's just like, okay, it's like it almost seems like a cult in the sense that, you know, you're it's like going to school and you're not able to like debate the what's being taught. So if you have a professor who's just telling you this, you know, it's a pro-colonial view of American history. This is the way things are. It's good. You should like it. And if you have any disagreements with it, you fail. You know what I'm saying? That's not really an enlightened institution, in my opinion. That makes it really rigid, and it actually makes it seem more like a form of indoctrination. And that's what I kind of see what's going on in Freemasonry. And I find it really suspicious that out of all the Freemasons that I've talked to, and I've talked to quite a few that would all refuse to come on my show, that they would all agree in this view of religion as being mystic, if not even more abstract than that. You know what I'm saying?
Freemasonry is?
Well, yeah, that most Masons that are involved in Freemasonry have these really mystic views on religion.
Mm-hmm.
And
I would say that. Well, I would say that that's probably true. I would say that I tend to.
Can I ask a question about that? What, to the extent that you can say, what is it that leads you from, say, where you were to being there now, and having that kind of a view? What things led you to that?
To answer that, it's a good question, and actually in answering it, it'll actually cover Carl's question and what he was talking about. It is an institutional system that teaches a particular subset of things, and those things, if through, you know, the quote-unquote time immemorial, have been what's been considered as these landmarks to it. And it's from those that you start to extrapolate and build out from. So it's like, you know, literally giving you a set of builder's tools, and now here, go and start formulating your ideas to it. Start, you know, constructing it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't give you absolutes. It's not going to tell you directly that you know, one religion is right or the other. It's not going to tell you directly that there are absolutes to it. You know, the only conformist absolute is a faith in something beyond yourself. Which in certain circles can incorporate Hinduism, Buddhism, Christianity, Islam. It's back to that tantamount aspect of faith, what you believe. I think when you come at the question, or you come at the institution with a certain mindset, if you have an absolute in your head without a willingness to open up and take in other things, then you're coming at it from the same stance that you say that they hold. You know what I mean? It's like two rocks bumping up against each other. I have my beliefs and morals, and this is what I think. So I'm going to argue and tell you that yours are wrong.
But no,
you know what I mean?
I hear what you're saying, but then again, it would be great to debate about the different aspects of Masonry and get into it. So it wouldn't be two rocks bumping up against each other. But Freemasonry is the one that put up the wall by concealing secrets.
But the question is the debate to convince them of your being right, or
no,
is the debate to change the system?
It's just to debate whether or not I'm correct or you're correct. It's just, you know, it's a typical philosophic exchange to try to get to a higher truth. And the problem,
right.
Like,
I guess what I'm asking in that is that the aspect of Freemasonry is that Freemasonry, it has a subset of absolutes that it looks at to a degree,
mm-hmm.
No pun intended, but it's not trying to necessarily impart to you a particular moral lesson. Well, moral lesson, but it's not trying to teach you a particular. It's not trying to teach you a particular thing. It's not trying to tell you what to believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's not going to come at you and say your faith is wrong because, you know, this happened here, this happened there, or because these things don't gel with it. The tools that it gives you are the things to explore what your faith already is. You know, what is it you already believe? Why do you believe it? Where do those belief things come from? How does it dovetail into it? How does it not?
Right.
You know, how to analyze it for yourself. So that, in a sense, the Freemasonry, it's not necessarily the class. It's the pen and the paper, the notes that you take in the class.
Right.
It's the tools that you take as you do it. So the debate wouldn't necessarily be something that you would want to, you know, should I use a number two pencil or a Sharpie?
Mm-hmm.
The debate's more on your end. Once you've gone through these things and you're able to assimilate them into yourself and digest them and think about them, the debate happens inside of you. It happens in your way of considering something or your outlook towards something else.
Right.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that it's not an institution that is based on religious absolutes or faith-based absolutes. You know what I mean?
Right.
At a certain time, it may have been, and in the past, you know, Freemasonry had a very staunch upbringing in Christianity. Many of its allegories were linked to it, you know, in Judaism, and it pulled from those allegories at an earlier point. But even as you go further back, you know, philosophically, it pulled from a lot of other places.
Right.
You know, has bits and pieces of a lot of different things, which I think is where a lot of times it takes itself back to a Hermetic idea where, you know, the early Hermetic texts were initially lumped in with Christian texts as, you know, look at these, they're not really Gospels, but it applies. And then as later translator realized, wait a minute, these aren't Christian texts. These are even older Egyptian texts or Greek texts.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But the interesting thing about the Hermeticism is that it doesn't necessarily club you over the head with a set of absolutes that are immutable. It's ideas beyond that. It's, you know, the order out of chaos, the Platonic idea of chaos, you know, of
mm-hmm.
just the taking in of ideas and building, rather than this, you know, this Aristotelian idea of, you know, trying to create a structure of something. You know,
mm-hmm.
let's create an outline of what our absolutes are, and that's what we're going to believe. You know,
right.
Not necessarily. It could be this sort of, you know, chaotic mass that you do form it.
Okay.
So, you know, this order out of chaos. I was talking to a developer friend of mine, and I don't know how heavily you get into computer development, but, you know, a lot of the ideas in the development community is this sort of order out of chaos, out of order. You know what I mean? So it's like this self-replicating idea that keeps building on itself. You start with a chaotic thing, you make order out of it, which leads you to the next chaotic thing, and then you keep building and building.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the difference, I think, is that it's not an absolute.
Right.
Just
to go back on what you said about Freemasonry, and it's more like the tools that help you, you know, take the class.
Mm-hmm.
So that analogy that you used, it seems to me that Freemasonry is a lot like what most mystery religions were supposed to have been, which is they don't really tell you what to believe. You go through mm-hmm. and you encounter the belief system, and you're supposed to draw from it conclusions that are hinted at. Like
mm-hmm.
it never specifically says it. But it, like you said in the last interview that we did, that if you start to believe in like the more mystic view of things, and you start to look at it from more a philosophic than a religious standpoint, like they're, you know, stop looking at it like Christ represents the Son of God who came for all of mankind, or that you know, Muhammad came to teach, you know, the teachings of Allah, things like that. If you get the more fundamental ideas of religion, it seems to me that, in essence, Freemasonry is kind of like hinting at things, and then if you get it, you get it. If you don't get it, then you don't get it. And you even said that the attitudes of many of the Freemasons on the higher levels are like that. They are, if you're supposed to be among people who get it. And the idea is, and I think that to say that it doesn't teach you anything just because it doesn't specifically say it doesn't mean that it's not teaching you, because you are being taken along a path. There's an educational path that's drawn out through each one of the rituals and the degrees and the symbolism, you know.
Absolutely. And just as a parallel, I mean, there's a reason why it absorbed and held on to so strenuously the ideas of construction, of the temple builders, of the original free stonemasons, you know. It's this idea of building, taking these different aspects and then building from it. And even back to what I said much earlier in the conversation, is the aspect of it being a religion of sorts of reason.
Mm-hmm.
It wants you to learn from these things. It wants you to be able to develop these ideas.
Right.
You know, not just take an absolute, not just take, you know, here it is, go ahead and do this. Here's your list of things that you need to do in order to be an adherent of the faith. It wants you to go out there and figure out why did you believe what you believe. Where do those things come from?
But let's just say, for example, I'm climbing degrees in Freemasonry, and for whatever reason, my research into the various topics leads me to believe in a faith of a more fundamental aspect, and I want to adhere to that. Are you going to be kind of a black sheep of the institution or what? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
No one's ever going to ask you that. That's your judgment with your God.
Uh-huh.
That's the beauty of it. No one's ever going to ask you, you know, no one, there's no slip of paper that you have to fill out every 6 months. You know, what do you believe this month? That's not an issue.
Right.
You know, if your fundamentals change and you shift from believing in an absolute, you know, divine power at some point, or, a hereafter, then you may want to think about it, because then your own outlook may be contrary to what the institutions are. And then, you know, why would you want to stay with something that you disagree with?
Right.
So no one's ever going to ask you that. That becomes your problem. You know what I mean? That's up to you. No one cares.
But
no one should care. And if they do, then they're not a very, you know, very good practicing Mason, are they?
Right. Gotcha. And this is what leads me back to another thing that we never really got to, because I had to get into all this with you and we didn't have time. But it seems to almost be like a factory for a certain belief system. It's not intention is not to become the church itself, but to basically guide people into a certain belief system. And it's turning out people, you know, like the more people who join, they go through this process, and if they don't like it, they leave. But it does end up, you know, and there, I think that there's some, you know, things that are taught in it that are really interesting, like that are definitely worth debating, because I don't know if history really provides proof or evidence for certain types of philosophical beliefs. On the last show I did, I got into Nimrod and the symbolism of ancient Babylon and the Babylonian temple, which they said that because Nimrod founded Nineveh, built the great cities, that he could, in essence, be referred to as one of the first Freemasons, because he's one of the first builders. That came from Pike and Hall and Judges.
If memory serves me well, I think in Anderson's Constitution, which is one of the earliest constitutions of Freemasonry, there's a reference to Nimrod. I don't have my books in front of me, and I couldn't verify or deny, but there's been a pantheon of people that they've attributed as, you know, quote unquote Freemasons, builders of free society, builders of reason, from, you know, that try to liken Jesus into it, Muhammad, all the great thinkers. You know, you can even probably lump Vishnu in it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Vishnu, I can't think offhand, but there's certainly people have made a lot of claims to a lot of things, and you know, if in your philosophy or your mindset you want to look at it that way, well, you know, Pike lists a lot of people in his book as the, you know, contributors to this overall idea,
mm-hmm.
and maybe in some ways philosophically they were,
mm-hmm.
yeah, maybe they weren't. You know, that's sort of for you to reason through.
Right.
You know, again, that goes back to the idea that Freemasonry is giving you the implements to sort of look at these things as how they relate to the broader idea of it,
right,
rather than give you the culmination of the idea.
Interesting. Okay. So let me ask you another question, kind of semi-related to this. Do you believe there's an age of enlightenment coming to mankind? The age of reason, the utopian idea of the age of reason, and you refer to reason a lot. I know that, you know, order out of chaos basically means a conversion from a world of chaotic to, you know, more ordered, reasonable existence. And at least that's how it's symbolized by some of the people who use the term. Whether or not you agree with that or not is totally different. But do you believe that there is an age of reason or enlightenment coming?
Do I think there's an age of reason coming down the line?
Let me be more specific, because that seems so abstract. One would hope that there is, okay? But do you believe that this age of reason, do you attribute that to this so-called age of Aquarius? Do you believe in the age of Aquarius and so on?
And you mean like in this shifting 3,000 years through the zodiac and
right.
yada, yada, yada?
Right.
I don't know. If I were 3,000 years old, I would tell you, if I could look back. I mean, just in looking at your history, I know some authors have tried to construct a mechanism to say, you know, 1,000 years ago we were doing this, and 1,000 years before that, and, you know, we're just moving out of the age of religion building, that we're moving into the age of this sort of enlightenment. Do I think that that's absolute? Yeah, not necessarily. I think that these things maybe happen in the ages. I think it's a very broad thing to try to generalize in a very simple answer. I think certainly that with a back to the utopian idea of the more people I have knowledge and ability to think, that certainly that would be the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as free education tends to grow and more people have access to it and more people are able to learn and make their own decisions about things, certainly that should come to pass.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not the next 2,000 years, you know, we're going to be populated in a planet with, you know, sages and philosophers, maybe. I mean, I don't know. It remains to be seen. I don't think anything is ever an absolute. I think it's, you know, a lot of what we do to it.
Right. Okay. Okay. Let me see here. So, somebody wanted me to ask you what you think about 2015.
The Aztec calendar.
Yeah. And I believe it's the Mayan, too. Is that true?
The Mayan calendar. Yeah. I think it's interesting. I don't know if I necessarily ascribe to it, though, like that. Because their calendar ended at that date, I don't know enough of the history or the archaeology for them to know the specifics to it. I tend not to think, though, that there's a set date. You know, I mean, a lot of people have predicted the end of the world, and obviously they're wrong. So, you know, are we reading into it what we want to put into it, or are we, in fact, you know, reading it for what it is? That's the question. I don't know if I prescribe it, though.
Does that, just out of curiosity, then, does that mean there's kind of an end of the world that you do imagine?
Like a apocalypse sort of.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, it could happen one day that everyone dies or whatever. I mean, there's, but yeah, more like an apocalypse.
I personally don't tend to believe that. No, I you know, again, that's just sort of through my own development in time of just thinking about these things and coming to my own conclusions of them. Like by some external mechanism of divine agent that would abruptly end the world for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Besides it being a comet or, you know, some order coming out of that chaos of the universe, I don't prescribe to that.
In that case, when you use a term like order out of chaos, it sounded, in a way, it was kind of like a naturalistic, that kind of sounded like saying there's a naturalistic answer to something that other people might see as supernatural or whatever. Is that true? Would you say that's part of how you
probably
define that?
I mean, that was kind of what I was thinking. You know, anything could happen at any time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There could very well be a meteor that's hurtling towards this planet that's been hurtling towards it for, you know, the last million years.
Right.
So whether or not someone wants to try to predict it for a date, I don't know that if we necessarily can. You know, even going to a biblical reference for, you know, the return of Christ, no man knows the day.
Right.
So I think it's impossible to try to predict. I mean, okay, a calendar ended at a certain date. Why did it end? Well, because they, you know, saw that was the end of their calendar system. You know, maybe that was only as big as the stone was that they could carve it on.
Right.
Interesting. Okay, so I'm trying to, it's getting really deep. I'm trying to figure out other questions, and it's like, wow, my mind's spinning right now. I don't even know what direction to go in here.
I have a backwards question.
Sure.
A question that goes back to kind of earlier.
Sure.
Because we were talking about the utopian ideas and, you know, it kind of sounded like a lot of that conversation was about the definition of what a utopia is. And you agreed that it would be a thing that would obviously have to exclude others. I'm curious, what do you feel about that? What do you think about that?
Excluding other people, or
about that being a part of making, quote, like a utopian society. Is there a moral judgment that you would put on that kind of exclusion for a utopian ideal?
A moral judgment to justify it? I think in order to achieve that, you would have to, at a certain extent, control a group that disagrees with you somehow. I certainly think that's true.
Something like that, the possibility for something like that, okay, and how do you feel about if that happens? Is that something that you would think is right, is wrong, is neither?
You mean if a utopia was to come to pass? If one day that were to happen? I think it would depend on what side of the fence I was on as to whether or not I agreed or disagreed with it.
But the part that has to do with the exclusion of everyone else, what do you feel about that?
Because you said that you were in support of the idea of a better utopian-type world, but at the same time, because you said it was a good idea, but at the same time, there is an aspect of it that it wouldn't automatically neglect other people's views. So he's asking, I think, is that right? Am I right
on
this?
Basically, I understand that you agree that a utopia would require the exclusion of others. What I don't know is how you feel about the exclusion of others, and is that okay?
Right. I don't like it. I don't like the idea of excluding anybody's opinion to it. At the same time, though, I think there certainly has to be a consensus, majority or otherwise, that whatever the idea is, that it's going to benefit people in the best possible way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's sort of the wrench in the works to utopia. Not mm-hmm. everybody's going to agree.
Right.
And certainly, the rhetoric behind an idea is going to carry it further than what the actual idea is. Mm-hmm. A centralized healthcare to take care of everybody in this country makes a great idea.
Right.
You know what I mean? Those that can't afford healthcare, those, the indigent, even veterans. You know what I mean? It just makes a good idea to be able to take care of your people. So does mm-hmm. a comprehensive educational system. Makes sense. Make sure your people are smart so that they can make smart decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Other people disagree, and certain arguments are stronger than others. People follow the rhetoric one way or the other.
But let's get into something about that then. Because, for example, you got vaccinations. There's people who are not vaccinating their kids because they believe that there's harmful chemicals in there. And there are harmful chemicals in vaccinations. Mm-hmm. But the government has a tendency to say, it's important for you to have vaccinations, so we think we should be able to enforce it upon you. And if it had not been for a huge contingent of people who basically said, no, we will not allow you to do that, we the people are standing up, a lot of times government does what they think is in the best interest of the people, and oftentimes that's infringing on their rights because they seem to have it all figured out, at least they think.
You know,
and then you think about a utopian idea and, what it takes to get there. If your idea of a utopian government and all these people agree with you and they're in the governments of the world, that there should be, say, a one world government, okay? And you typically have a person, or you're a person that does not agree with that view, and you know what I'm saying? And then they want it, they're going to have to stifle your influencing of other people. You know what I'm saying? And that's the kind of thing you see today, unfortunately, that we live in a world now where wiretapping is in the news and no one's protesting hardly. A few outrageous speeches over the TV if you're lucky, and mostly on the internet. But it just seems that it's impossible. It's literally impossible to have a world without that type of thing and still have it be utopian. And would it be? Is it?
Is it worth it?
Is it worth it? Whose opinion is going to matter there? You know,
right?
The majority
I agree with what you're saying, and I think that's the sort of downside here. It's hard to find that happy medium. Should the government? I hate to make this about a governmental sort of conversation, but should the government have the ability to tell you an absolute like that? No, I don't think that they should, but. Mm-hmm. If the evidence lends itself to show that it's in the interest of the greater people to eradicate malaria with chemicals that might harm 1% of the population but save the other 99%, I think that that's in the interest of the public good.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I mean? It's a very hard road to go down. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, the overall is for the moral good. Are you helping more than you're hurting, I guess,
right.
is what it comes down to.
And also
I don't agree with
Oh, go ahead.
I don't always agree with that. I think you're right. I remember growing up, and even with my children, having to, get them vaccinated in order to get them into the public institution of school. You can't go to school unless you've got your TB shot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but the reason behind it is to keep other people from getting and spreading TB.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I understand,
thankfully, science has done enough on their end of it, and, mm-hmm. and the institutions that are supposed to regulate and govern this stuff have done their jobs in making sure that it will, if it harms anybody, it would be a very, very, very small portion of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, it's mitigatable. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
That it
won't necessarily kill a lot of people. It'll maybe harm a few, but we can treat it and stop that treatment and do an alternative. But I think that goes back to the same thing as voting. That takes a rigorous interest of the populace to pay attention to those things. That you know, we as the populace that elect the government can say, no, the FDA can't release a drug until it's had 20 years of trials, even if it saves every test case life. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that, you know, that they've got the right sampling of people. You know, it goes back right to our involvement. You, me, everybody else needs to be involved in these decisions. You need to vote for the elected officials that are going to promote that. You need to write letters to them. You need to be active. You need to be participatory. You can't sit back and just say, oh, my God, I can't believe they're making me get shots, without really having done your footwork to make sure you know why they're giving you the shot, find out what they're doing and how long they tested it.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Well, we're kind of running out of time here. We got a few more minutes. I just want to ask you one last question and get some insight, and then we'll go ahead and let you go. Maybe we can do an interview with you again on another time, and maybe we'll get some callers in, other than Lucifer, of course. hopefully what I've been talking about has been so enlightening and so interesting that there was no need to ask questions because they were more interested in what I had to say.
It was all fully covered.
And it's, yeah. So anyways, the last question that I have for you is about, like, going back to this topic and just trying to see on your what your opinion is on the matter. If debate in Freemasonry is a huge topic for me, because I, from what I understand Freemasonry to be, I could never join consciously because of the fact that I have oppositions to what I believe is going on in there. In order for me to get to the bottom of what's going on in there, I need to be able to get into an active debate where the so-called secrets are able to be debated, and until I can come to some kind of conclusion. And it kind of puts a wall. If I was somebody who was interested in potentially joining but had these concerns, I mean, what do you do in a situation like that? Do you basically just say, sorry, you know, it's just not going to happen for you?
I mean, or do you, or if someone were to want to become a Mason but then wanted to...
Well, no, I'm saying that...
What, it's teaching or...
Well, I mean, I would imagine that Freemasonry would say, you know, we'd want as many people in as possible. We want people to come and be part of the fraternity. So, you know, if I myself have problems with aspects of what's being taught within Freemasonry, and but I needed to debate it with you first, you know, what would you do in that situation? Would you basically just say, sorry, you have to join in order to debate, or are you just pretty much done? I mean, you just can't be a part of it.
Okay. As an individual, if you were to come to me with that question, you know, that I want to talk about these aspects of it, I would talk about them with you in to the fullest of the extent that I could. Again, without giving away the secrets, but without giving away the aspects of it that would presumably be your enlightenment to it, certainly discuss them with you. And if there were concerns, I would make the recommendation to you as to whether or not it was something that was for you or not for you, you know?
Right.
If you had certain ideas that you thought that it included, or, you know, if you thought it was a Luciferian cult, I would certainly address those and tell you that it's not, and that it's misguided and necessarily trusting those that say that it is and what's their agenda for saying that it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the system itself is a closed loop, and it does seek to encourage those of like mind to come to it to help them develop their ability to look beyond that and to explore their own ideas. But if it's become in an idea of changing it or to debate the topics of it to convince somebody that they're right or wrong, I would encourage them that it's probably then not for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not that it's a system that doesn't encourage questioning, but because of that's the system. And if you want a system that allows you to go in and debate the aspects of it, then certainly I would steer you towards a system that did that.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your interview. We're going to have to go ahead and get going. Greg Stewart, FreemasonInformation.com. Check out – what's your podcast site again?
We're doing a new podcast. We rolled it out a couple of weeks ago. We got the next one this Sunday. It is at MasonicCentral.blogspot.com.
Okay. Awesome.
Which they'll find links to it. So.
Okay, and his blog is MasonicTraveler.com. Check it out. And next week we're going to – go ahead.
The blog is at MasonicTraveler.blogspot.com.
Okay,
gotcha. Blogger. Great, cool.
Okay, cool. Thanks a lot, Greg.
You bet. Take care, guys.
Take care. So next week we have Vicky Davis. She's going to be talking to us about regionalism and the NAFTA Superhighway. She's been doing a lot of good research. Her website is channelingreality.com. Check it out, and we'll see you next week. Comes to change, you don't want to make it happen. Bankers, lawyers, distrust, paranoias. You think you're thinking, but you're not, they can destroy us. InfoWars are intercepted, living on a prison planet, living in satanic times with the fuck it. Laugh it off, laugh at Alex Jones, laugh at Aaron Russo, but I'm too smart to do so. Yeah, you're telling me to think outside.